On July 7th, 2020, at 4:30 a.m., my husband, Brad, was in a cycling accident. He survived, but with a traumatic brain injury. Hi, I'm Alyssa Cousins, your host of Self Care Spotlight. Since 2017, I've been dedicated to real talk self-care. And this season, we're focusing on one healing modality, writing, specifically poetry. Welcome to the Poetic Healing Series. I'm currently writing my first poetry memoir about this journey. But in the meantime, I want to highlight the poets and poetess out there who are sharing the messy human experience through the art and catharsis of beautiful words. Because the world needs healing and hope and human relating more than ever. So every week, you'll hear a different conversation with one of today's well-known poetry authors on poems to heal racial injustice, sexual empowerment, to using your voice, love, and so much more. As a bonus, they'll share some pieces with spoken word. I am not here to be a poet. I am here to feel my feelings and thus maybe help you feel yours. Hold space for the lamenting. Make room for the grieving. Have hope for the healing. That comes from today's guest, Ariel Astoria. So did you know that April is National Poetry Month and Brad's birthday month? I know, this new series could not be more fitting to celebrate. Now, before we get to this gorgeous conversation, and P.S., yes, she is reciting some of her most beloved pieces that she chose and some that I chose. She is a fantastic spoken word poet, one of the best, in my opinion, that's out there right now. I want to just pause very briefly and say, this is a brand new series for this podcast, for this new season. It's called Poetic Healing. And if you haven't listened to the episode right before this, you totally have free will to listen to this one, but you may want to pause, go back and listen to the episode that intros this entire series. Again, that's called Poetic Healing, brought to you by Self Care Spotlight. The episode is just me and the mic. There's no guest. It's me. And I'm telling you all about why poetic healing, why are we talking about poetry specifically as a healing modality and form of expression, why really I wanted to do this series, why I wanted to talk to the poets and the poetess out there, and I'm writing a book, P.S., and also, most importantly, perhaps to lay the foundations for all of this and what led to the poetry is my husband's traumatic brain injury. And the story behind that. It happened in July of 2020, and I am getting raw and real with all of you and sharing all of the details of that, where I have been for almost a year on hiatus. Him and I actually recorded an episode and released it in May of last year, and then 2 months later, he had his cycling accident and suffered the TBI. So I've been away and I'm just explaining everything and where we've been and where we are and where we're going to just set the tone for the rest of this, probably my most favorite series I've ever done. This one means a whole hell of a lot to me. And I think it's just really beautiful. And I get to talk and you get to listen to some of the most big feelers out there who know how to connect and relate to the human experience through beautiful words. What's better than that? We all need that more than ever. So with that being said, you can always go back and listen if you haven't. If you have already, thank you for listening. Otherwise, settle in and enjoy this episode. We're sitting down today. This is an episode with my first guest for this series. and it's none other than Ariel Astoria. She is what she calls a professional feeler and virtual sunshine, and that's exactly what she feels like. Absolutely. Having talked to her and just even looking at her, I know it sounds silly, her Instagram page, it just evokes her as a soul, as a human, and we get to hear from her and all of her wisdom today and her story and her why poetry. And she had some of my favorite answers to some of the questions I've been asking people. So I'm very excited for you to listen to this one today. Here's a little bit about Ariel. Ariel Astoria is made of sass and good intentions, has a deep love for car karaoke, good coffee paired with even better conversation, breakfast burritos, and flowers. My kind of woman, right? Ariel is a spoken word poet, gifted writer and author, captivating and authentic MC and speaker. And again, you're going to get to hear her sharing and reciting her words. Shamelessly claiming that she is in the business of pulling on heartstrings, her motto is words not for the ears, but for the soul. Ariel also has a very specific heart in empowering, encouraging, and making space for audiences of women to feel at home in their own bodies. Ariel has shared her work through spoken word workshops and themed keynote talks with companies such as Google, So Far Sounds, Lululemon, Dresember, TEDx, The Skims Campaign by Kim Kardashian, Hollis Co. by Rachel Hollis, and more. Ariel's first EP, a collection of music and poetry called Symphony of a Lioness, and her many other singles are available on iTunes, Apple Music, and Spotify. She is the co-author of two collections of poetry, Vagabonds and Zealots, and Write Bloody, Spill Pretty. And without further ado, here's our conversation. Okay. We are officially on and recording with the lovely Ariel Astoria. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're most welcome. I know you had a really busy morning, so.
Yes, we're here, we're pausing, it's great.
Like I said, self-care spotlight. Oh boy. Okay, so I have this, you know, first thought that I really wanted to ask you about, because I think it just kind of, this is going to just set everything for the rest of this conversation of poetic healing. Mm-hmm. Your motto, really, and, you know, I've seen this on your Instagram, I saw it in your bio, you know, that feels like it's really a part of your brand, who you are, what you believe in. Mm-hmm. It's words not for the ears, but for the soul. I just want to hear in your own words today, you know, when we're recording this on a Monday in March, what does that mean to you today and always?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I first came up with it, it was in that season of like, okay, we need business cards. You know, what is your thing? What if you can describe what you do, on your business card in a short way, what is that? And I came up with, you know, words not for the ears, but for the soul. And I think where that really stems from is just my own personal desire to always be a space where people resonate deeply with either my art, with either, you know, interactions. I've really felt like as an artist, if I was getting on stage and people were only taking note of my outfit or, you know, how my makeup was that day and nothing else that permeated deeply, then I didn't think I was doing my job as an artist. And even more so, if I walk off stage and all they think about is me, then I don't think I did my job as an artist. So I wanted it to be less about hearing and more about experiencing. And so that's where that came from. I think the soul has an experience and we can hear things all we want. And, you know, the term of in one ear and out the other. And I didn't want that. I wanted it in 1 year and like straight to this hole. Not quite a gut punch, but more like an embrace. And maybe a gut punch, you know, depending on what we're talking about. But for the most part, I wanted it to resonate. And I wanted what I did, what I created, to resonate deeply. And that's both for digital spaces and online spaces. So that's kind of where my heart with that came from.
You want people to feel.
Mm-hmm.
You want to, yeah. Don't just hear, like, feel it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting point, though. See, here I go with, like, on a tangent of when you just said, I don't want people, when you were just starting out, to just, you know, hey, are people going to be paying attention to how is my hair or what was she wearing? Uh-huh. How was her makeup? Which I think is something that is unique to women. So, that's interesting, because how do you feel like you walk that line? Because when I've seen you and watched your videos of you speaking, you are quite stylish and you have a presence in your, like, the physical, your appearance, your aesthetic, how you present yourself.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, like, how you walk that line between, like, I want you to really hear my words, but also, I like playing with, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, you model as well, right? So that mm-hmm. part is also, it seems at least, important to you. How do you feel like you keep that balance, or just any thoughts you have on that?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, the presence is in itself is an invitation to the experience. So being what I've been told, being a captivating person, I think that's just an invitation. And sure, it could be, you know, initially mesmerizing, but then that's what captures, right? And I think that's what permeates ultimately, is the attention's already held. The capturing has already been had. And then it's like, take it one step deeper of like, I'm not just here to be something nice to look at. You know, I think Adele, when she first came out, she talked a lot about that. She's, you know, when people kept talking about her weight and things like that, she was like, I'm not here for you to look at me. I'm here for you to listen. And I've always felt really deeply connected to that. And being in the spaces that I have been of, you know, once I did get into the social media world, they picked me up as more of an influencer model than a words person, you know, and I found ways to find that balance. But even in photo, there's a story being told, you know, even in photos, there are words being shared, whether they're physically on the photo or whether something's being conveyed. So regardless, it's still for the soul. Photos for the soul, words for the soul, modeling for the soul, whatever it may be. And so I think that initial space that you're talking about of like, yeah, I do love style. I do love fashion. And that's been a huge part of my own body journey with finding colors and embracing, you know, all of me. That's been a huge part of my own journey, and comes out as, at the end of the day, I'm an artist, you know? So sometimes the art that day is my outfit, you know? And on stage, I tend to be a little bit more subdued, just because I know that that's not the focus, you know? So I might have a flowy dress on, but most times it'll be neutral toned. And because I know, yeah, the attention is not supposed to stay on me. If that's what captures, if that's what invites, beautiful. But that's not what's supposed to sustain and remain permeate, at the end of everything.
You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me how in yoga, a lot of people will come to yoga for the first time. And what initially grabs them is, I want to be more flexible. Let's go with that. And then the reason they stay and keep coming back is because they felt something deeper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what that reminds me of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I I love yoga. I've practiced for about 8 years or so now, and I think that's my favorite space as well, is the invitation of, like, this is the intention I'm setting to come into this space. However, the space in your body is going to then turn that into what you need, right? So coming in with the intention to be flexible is really beautiful and well-intended. But at the end of the day, what the process is going to do is show up in what you need. And what you need, you may not actually be able to express in an intention. And I think words in poetry spaces are similar that way for me, of just like, I'm a very empathetic, sometimes highly sensitive person. And so knowing what's needed in that space of, like, I see and respect your intention, which is you're at this woman's conference to learn more about how to be confident in yourself, how to show up in this world. However, what you actually may need is just to hear that you yourself are equipped and enough without the business, without the this, without the that. So I think they translate over very intentionally with each other.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, I get that. So I've been asking everybody that I've been having on about the story behind why poetry. Because I think everyone has a different entry point to why they started writing that specific expressive medium of all the different forms of writing, creative writing. Mine, as I shared with you, was my husband's TBI. And that trauma, and finding that, like you just said, I could find the words in poetry for things that I wasn't even sure I had the words or for, right? And helped me to process. So I'm curious, why poetry? Like, how did you get to the point of where you are now as this spoken poet, MC, writer, speaker? Why poetry?
Yeah, I've always been in love with written word. It started with theater first for me. So I went to an arts high school and I wrote a lot in that space. I've had like lots and lots of journals where I just kind of processed the world around me. And instead of like doodling in a notebook, I usually wrote, lines or poems or things like that. So it's kind of always just been how I best process the world in myself. And then I turn, that more into the theater space. And so I was writing plays and monologues and things in the perspective of other people. And a lot of the monologues just had a natural spoken poetic sense to them. And then graduating and really loving the art and world, but then also being a very practical human a lot of times too. So I was like, well, how do I make the practical and the not practical mix? And so I studied psychology and theater in college, and all the while still kind of performing, still doing little things like that here and there. And it wasn't until I performed a monologue on campus, where I now call him like my poetry brother, he was like, did you write that? That was spoken word. And I was like, no, it's a monologue. It's like when you put yourself. He was like, no, but the way you performed it, the way you spoke it, all of it was spoken word. That then turned into 2 years on a competitive poetry team. And then being part of our campus's poetry club, and all the while doing things here and there of like, can you perform here? Can you perform there? And so it kind of just translated over. I'd always written in the space of vulnerability. Through theater, it was through the vulnerability of a character. Through poetry, just became my own vulnerability. And I'd always kind of written poems and like shared them with my mom and maybe my sisters, but that was like pretty much it. So that, I mean, the written word was just how, it was the only way I knew how to come to terms with myself, with art, with faith, with body, with all of it. And it just so happened to become also what is my career? So definitely not the transition I thought I was gonna go in. Like, I really thought I would work at a university. I thought I would be doing child therapy. And but I'm not. I'm doing therapy for the world, as some people like to say. So yeah.
Well, you're doing healing in a different way. That's all.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's what, you know, isn't it funny how that happens? You know, I had planned myself to go for teaching. I also thought I was going to be a teacher. And then I ended up becoming a yoga teacher.
Yeah. Crosses over so beautifully, doesn't it, though?
I'm like, well, I am a teacher. I just am not teaching kids history, which is what I thought I was going to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
It all figures itself out.
Always.
So why do you think, you know, right now, like you said, okay, you've stepped into, you're a spoken word poet. We just saw Amanda Gorman. Mm-hmm. Like, she just lit the whole world up and brought poetry, I think, really to a huge spotlight. I feel like poetry, not just this year, but just maybe just as of late, maybe you feel this way too. It seems like poetry, I don't know if I want to call it a comeback, but it just seems that it's becoming a very, very, it's becoming more popular. People are paying attention to it. People are paying attention to poets and poetesses. More people are buying, I feel like, poetry books. I'm seeing so many new writers, publishing companies that focus on poetry authors. And then when we, you know, we saw Amanda Gorman, and it just feels like there's this spotlight. I'm curious if you feel that way too, and because obviously poetry has always, I mean, spoken word. Let's go back to ancient Greek times.
Totally.
You know, this is not new.
It's been there.
So I'm curious, you know, how you feel around, I guess, the current climate around poetry and just your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think when you think about just the context of poetry and spoken word specifically, those were very controversial things for a really long time. They usually were more prominent in really heightened political times and spaces for a reason. And I think where we're at right now in our phase of history is a really heightened political and just systemic overall space. Like, we're all very tender, and the tenderness is universal because we've been constantly reminded in this space and time that we are a collective, and we've always been a collective. And so I think the rise of poetry in this time is poetry was always meant to speak to the zeitgeist, you know, the time of right now, but then more importantly, make, you know, prophecy almost to what's coming and where we're headed. And I think that is why it is surfaced. You know, like you said, there is a spotlight, but it's always been there. It's really surfaced right now in our community because it needs to be. That's the thing. I tuned into a workshop a few weeks ago, and he was talking about, you know, you do the work and the students come, right? You do what you need to do, and those who need to listen will be part of that process, but you do first what you need to do. And in this season, artists are just doing what they need to do. Poets are doing what they need to do. And that is to encourage, that is to ignite, that is to restore, and that is to speak to, this is where we have been, this is where we are, but here is the hope. It's where we're going. And I think it's really beautiful, and it goes in waves. Like, and maybe I don't know if it's because I'm super in the world, but I'm like, I don't feel like it's as like brought to the surface as it could be. I still think there's like just little tiny blooms coming up from the soil in word form, if you will. And so, yeah, but I think there is more of a need for it right now. We need poetry right now. We need hope in right now. We need encouragement right now. We need the reminder of how far we've come, you know, because it's exhausting how and where we're trekking right now. So I think that's really what we're seeing right now, is there's a need for it, and all of us kind of need it.
So a couple things that I'm wanting to pull out from what you just said. Number one, that you said that we're all a little tender. Yes, that's a good word to describe it. Number two, you said that it's poetry can be very prophetic, like a prophecy. Can you dive a little bit more into that?
Yeah. So prophecy is usually it's kind of tied to in a really stereotypical sense, you know, fortune tellers and things like that. But all prophecy is speaking light to what is to come, pretty much. That's my own definition. Don't quote me. That won't be when you look up in Merriam, but that's my own definition, right? It's speaking to what is to come, which is a little elusive sometimes because it's like, well, how do you know? And I think the arts was always meant to be a little bit, let's speak to what's to come, you know, because oftentimes we just get overwhelmed and saturated with either what was or what is. And there's, I think there's a balance. So poetry and arts kind of bring that balance back to, this is where we are, and it may seem really blinding and overwhelming and heavy, but like, let's speak to what we're learning here in order to step forward, if you will. So it's really just giving light to like the end of the tunnel a little bit.
Right. Yeah, I think, of course, it depends. Because there's different, what I want to say. That's not goals. Like the intention behind the piece can be one that is very prophetic and hope-inducing. And then there's the pieces, you know, I'm thinking of some that you've written. I'm thinking of some that I've written, other ones, where you're just speaking to, for example, like you have The Art of Feeling. I'm thinking of that one in my head because I told you that was a favorite. And that's one where you're really owning what is and being like, this is how I feel. And I'm accepting it. I'm sitting with it. So yes, it's like a poetry can induce so much of that propheticness, and it can also sit in the what is-ness. It can do both. Which kind of drives me towards this question that I've been thinking about in my own head, and I don't know the answer to. I don't know that there is an exact answer. And we've kind of looped our way around it. But what do you really think it is? Like, when you say, we need poetry right now, what do you think it is about the way poetry is in and of itself? That, why is it healing? Like, what is it about poetry? What, like, compared to other forms of writing or artistic expressions, I've tried to really think about if I could pinpoint what it is about poetry. How is it healing? I'm curious if you have a thought on that. I mull over it.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, like you said, I don't think there is a specific, honestly, like, the first thing that comes to mind is because it is. You know, and what about our minds and our brains make us go to the, but why? Can the answer be because it is? Because it is, right? And then that could be a drop down of various different things. Because it is honest. Because it is encouraging. Because it is vulnerable, because it is heart-wrenching, because it is speaking to, like you were talking about, the what is, because it is hopeful, right? It's healing because it is. And I think all art forms have that remedy to them because art was always meant to be that, you know? Why can art also be a form of therapy? Because it is healing, you know, because it is restorative, because there is so much room to ebb and flow and be and become. And I think, yeah, honestly, that as, you know, I'm thinking about like, oh, well, why is it healing? All I heard was Because it is, you know, because it's made to be, because it has the opportunity to be. And I think it's just a matter of what and how do you define healing? And it's usually, it just, the ability to mold and do so much. When you hear a song, it's a nostalgic response. It's a grieving response. It's a, you know, it's an excited response. And it's tends to be a pretty universal thing, you know? And so, yeah, I think because it is honestly the greatest answer I can give there. Mm-hmm.
Because it is.
Mm-hmm. Because it is, yeah.
That just reminds me of, and so it is.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
I think that's as good of an answer as any.
Thank you.
Because I sit on it and I'm like, I don't know. It just is.
Well, because then if we try to, because what we're doing there is a way of formulating and controlling.
Mm.
And I think if we know anything about poetry, just, and there's a way to format it, there's also a way not to format it. You know, there's a way to speak it, there's also a way not to speak it. You know, there's so much to it, and it's not meant to be something we can put in our little boxes of time or constraint or control. It's just as fluid, you know, as life is meant to be sometimes. You know, it's the contrast of Kairos versus Chronos. You know, Kairos is the whimsy, the unplanned, the serendipitous, and then we have Kairos, which is our calendars, our very strict, our alarms, you know, everything that is an organized way of keeping time. But if we learn anything within a pandemic space, is what is even time, you know, and like what we can't control that as much as we think we can. And art and poetry is the same way. So when we ask ourselves, why is it this way? That's ultimately our way of trying to, I want to know so that I can then control, manipulate, or have, you know, I know the thing, but like, oh, how much freedom is in not knowing the thing sometimes.
Yeah. There it is. I love that. I love that answer. That's one of my favorite answers I've gotten.
Mm.
I love that. I feel like I just got a little schooled, but I really like it. In a really good way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just because it is, which is, you know, I mean, poetry in and of itself, some of the best poems, they don't even necessarily sometimes make sense, right? You're right. Like, what?
And the best way, you know, like in the best possible way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yet it speaks to you and you're like, and then you go, why did that speak to me? Because you're...
You're like, because it did.
Just because
just
it did.
Just let that be. Yeah, let that be a hit. Because something in you resonated deeply with something conveyed in it, because you felt seen in words, because you felt maybe a little less crazy than before you heard it. You know, it's just because it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll call this episode "Because It Is."
I've been thinking about that one for a really long time myself. Yeah.
Well, with that being said, that poem that I talked about, the art of feeling, the isness, being with what is. I want to take a poetic pause. I'd like to take a poetic pause. We're, you know, 27 minutes into this. I'd really like to just take a moment. So with that being said, if you are driving, you do not need to close your eyes. In fact, please do not. Please keep them open. Otherwise, I'm just going to invite you just to, let's just close our eyes. Sit up nice and tall through your spine. Relax your facial muscles, your jaw, your eyelids. Let's just take a breath in through the nose. And then a gentle sigh out of the mouth. And just take this moment. And Ariel, when you're ready, we would like to listen to the art of feeling.
You beautiful feeling being, full of heart and soul, carrying grief and joy, sometimes in the same breath, attempting to find rhythms that keep you grounded, anthems of be where your feet are when the ground beneath you is steadily shifting. This year has not been the most gentle or the most kind, but it has been the most shaping and chiseling, calling the human being out of your existence and hushing the doing, causing you to still, to heal, to feel everything. Look at how far you've come. Look at how beautifully you've arrived. You've made it so far to the bliss of winter, the music of a turning page, this chapter beginning to close. And though there is no wrapping of bows in this final moment, look at the story that has unfolded. One of grief and sadness, one of hope and loss, one of unsurmountable joy and stunning surprises tucked in. Do not hold back. Do not suppress. Shed every tear. Laugh with all the joy that sorrow could not take from you. Carry all the joy you can grasp in your palms. Find familiarity in the twinkle of lights as they light up your eyes. The smell of home bringing you back. This is where your feet are. This is where you find your breath again. Find your breath again and feel all the feels, every single one of them. You glorious, feeling being, full of life, full of life.
And with that, let's take a breath. Softly out. And just like that, we can open up our eyes. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
It is such a gift, friends, to hear her on here. Such a gift. You are welcome. All right. Now I'm like, okay, let me get...
Let's get back.
Okay. Bloom from these tombs. All right. That piece, you know, I've listened to these on your Spotify. Mm-hmm. Which, what a gem that is, your Spotify.
Thank you.
I love that. I just put all my hair in front of my face. Spotify, you know, it's one of those places that I don't think people necessarily think. They think music, right? Uh-huh. But then there's these sneaky spoken poets on there. And they have these wonderful EPs and, you know, it's just great. And so if you've never checked out Ariel's Spotify, go find it. Just go find it. And I was listening to Bloom from These Tombs and The Art of Feeling, and you have quite a bit.
Yeah.
And that one, Bloom from These Tombs, was published in 2020, and mm-hmm. I would guess that, you know, this came out of really the outrageous racial injustices and turmoil stemming from George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Black Lives Matter, all of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when I was thinking about this piece, I thought the one question that actually I would really want to know the answer, and I'd be curious to hear the answer, is how did you feel writing and recording and sharing that a piece like Bloom from These Tombs, which we'll have you recite in a moment, but I can somewhat guess the inspiration for a piece like that, but I'm curious how you felt writing it and recording it and sharing it, because it's got a huge... There's a lot in there. There's a lot behind it. Even, you know, it's a minute and 26 seconds, and yet there's so much behind that. So I'm just going to pass that to you.
Yeah. I don't carry anger very well. It's not an emotion that sits well with me, which says a lot because I'm in Enneagram 4 and I live in my emotions. But anger is not one of them. It overwhelms me because of how often I don't sit in it. And I don't necessarily always have the need to sit in. So when I do, it's a very erupting experience. And this was a poem birthed out of anger and frustration that I don't usually sit in. It's very concise, you know, as you were saying, I tend to have longer poems, anywhere between 3 to 5 minutes. But this one felt like, no, I know exactly what I'm going to say. And that's it. Like you said, the timing of it was all of the above. And even more so, as the protests themselves were being brought to light from Seattle to Oregon to LA to anywhere and everywhere, where there were advocates, and the language around the protests is really where this came from, of seeing all these articles about destruction and X, Y, and Z of like why these protests were not protests. And so that's where a lot of the language, you know, of you viewed this, I called it pressure instead. I didn't call it a protest. I didn't call, you know, the conversations what they were. I called them pressure instead, because that's what protests do. They apply pressure, hopefully, to the system that is trying to be shifted, not always uprooted, but just shifted. And so that is where that came from. And just being overwhelmed by this really negative language around what the point of a protest and these conversations were is really where Blue from These Tombs came from.
Mm-hmm. With that being said, would you mind if we could hear that one?
Absolutely.
Okay. Friends, if you want to take another breath, I like to take a breath before I listen to something that's going to, you know, speak to me. So I'm going to go ahead and take a breath.
May this pressure be the thing that breaks the system, be the fire that bends the injustice, be the shovel that digs up the weeds in our society. You view this pressure as disruption, destruction, but all along we have just been trying to build something worth standing on. All this time we have been attempting to dig, toil, shift, uproot, make room in the soil for us too to bloom, turn this cemetery into a garden again. America is not great. She is sick. There's poison in her lungs. The black and brown blood can no longer stay seeped in, buried, or hidden. Black people are dying. Black bodies are crying. We cannot breathe. America is suffocating. May this pressure be an inhaler. May we exhale the waste, find life again in this place. This is no country. This is a cemetery. My prayers have turned morbid, only asking one thing. May something bloom from these tombs.
May this pressure be an inhaler. Again, thank you. The imagery behind bloom from these tombs, which tombs sounds dark, and then you've got this contrast, you've got bloom, and we think light and flowers, rebirth. That was very intentional, I imagine. Bloom from these tombs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you just speak a little to the title?
Yeah. I think most of where we come from is a cemetery of dead things. And I don't know how to say that lightly. I mean, in order for things to be birthed, a lot of times things have to then die. And unfortunately, in this setting of racial injustice, a lot of people have died. And the hope is not that they're just in the ground and nothing then comes from it, but that they're in the ground and permeated in soil, and soil that still could be rich, even with dead things inside. It still could be rich. Beautiful things could still bloom from them. And again, I don't carry anger well. So all my poems, even if they're a little sassy, a little edgy, a little, you know, angry, if you will, I have to come back to something beautiful always. And that is what that was, the final line. You know me, I kind of alluded that, you know, that this was a cemetery. I'm turning this cemetery into a garden again. Bloom something from these tombs, make life out of this dead space sometimes. And if that is what protests, if that's what marching, if that's what advocating and whatever it looks like, if that's what it's doing, is blooming something from dead spaces, from dead things. And that's the visual I wanted to leave, that there was still something
beauty, like there
beautiful.
Was yeah. Mm-hmm. I really resonate with that, and that's why I kind of wanted to ask you, because I mean, my whole, you know, with my husband's brain injury, I think, I personally feel brain injury is one of the most insidious things that can ever happen to a human being and their families. If you've ever experienced that, and how devastating that is, and the identity crisis that happens. And yet I've always wanted to somehow bring beauty to the pain.
Yeah.
So that, you know, people can find inspiration and empowerment and feel not alone and feel supported and find some grace in something so awful. So I resonate with exactly what you're saying. I get it. I get it. So I'm curious, what is on your heart right now? Is there anything that's like, in terms of writing or artistically speaking, is there something pulling at your heart? Is there a subject tugging at your heart?
Yeah, I think, there's always something that is kind of resonating. I have like a few pockets of things. I have a poem that should be releasing any day now, really, again on Spotify. And I was commissioned to do a poem. It's called I Am, you know, American History and I'm Black History. And it was a collective of Black artists. And so I wrote a poem about, it's called The Missing Piece. And it's like, what is the missing piece in all of this history? You know, us coming from generations of fighters and advocates and leaders, and we're all part of this, ultimately, is what that poem is about. And so that should be coming out pretty soon here. And by the time you're listening to this, it is out. So you should go listen to it on Spotify. And I'm currently writing a book right now, actually. So that conversation is just this space of unfolding, which could be another way to say growing, unlearning and relearning. I come from a pretty faith background, and just unlearning and exploring a lot of what that has looked like, what that means in my life, and what that means now. So I like the term unfolding because I love plants and I love flowers. And so you think of this little bud of something. And as we grow, as life goes on, it's just, you know, a petal gets pulled back. And it's this constant process until we are bloomed and existing fully as we haven't been intended to. So those experiences that lead up to me coming to that point are kind of like all the thoughts in my head right now. And yeah. Yeah.
The ever unfolding rose.
It's beautiful.
Yes. So another question I ask everybody, and before we get to rapid fire questions, what does self-care mean to you? Because it's a very trendy word.
Totally.
And I sometimes am like, I'm glad it's trendy. And I'm also, you know, that has, people have, I think, different connotations of what it really, what self-care truly means.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious, in your own words, what does that mean to you, that word, self-care?
Yeah, right now it's, I call it protecting my personhood. And oftentimes that looks like a Sunday where I'm not on social media. I'm watering my plants. I might be washing my hair. I might be cleaning my apartment. It's the things that fuel me as a person for the most part. I'm at a park, I'm reading, I'm going for a walk, you know, I'm unplugged and existing is mostly what that is. And then there's occasional where it could look like a massage, which is not really the case right now. It could be the more material consumerism ways of taking care of yourself. But for the most part, it's just the slow and existing at a pace none other than my own. And yeah, it's those moments where when I'm offline and I'm not producing or generating or creating necessarily, a lot of times I'm just feeling the space to do those things is what self-care has looked like a lot for me. It could be moving my body. It could be sleeping in. You know, I'm very intentional what self-care looks like. What is the need in this moment? And answering it. Or fulfilling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Self-care, you said self-care is moving at a pace none other than my own. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would kind of sum it up what you just said in that way.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to do some rapid fire?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. So, first question. I always say I need to get some kind of sound effect.
To like do it right before. I love it.
Maybe I'll find that. I'll look on like YouTube library.
Find a little sound effect. I love that.
I totally could do that. I just need to remember to. Okay, so rapid fire. First question. Easy peasy. What's your sun sign?
My sun sign.
Yeah, like your main astrology sign that most people.
I'm a Libra.
Libra, yes. Mm-hmm. It's like your core personality. Mm-hmm. Like there's the sun, the moon, the rising.
Got it. Yes, all the other aspects of it. Got it. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're a Libra.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense.
Doesn't it? That's good.
It really does. They're very beauty focused, the arts. Mm. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. I am a Libra rising, so ooh. That's... So your rising sign is how you come off to people. Mm. Yeah. So it's, granted, it's all a big wormhole of astrology.
Yeah.
But you do seem like one. I'm not saying I'm some, you know, guru here, but you do seem like one. Yeah. And even your personal aesthetic. It's very Libra.
That is a thing, yeah.
It is, it is. People do branding based off of that. They really do. Mm-hmm. Okay. What time of day or hours do you think that you write your best?
I guess in general, nighttime. But I also, like, got out of the shower yesterday and sat for 15 minutes because I called it a spilling because I had a spill. So I needed to, like, sit and write it down. So it really... It comes when it comes, but I think most consistently would be nighttime.
Like late light?
Late night. Like 11 to like 10 to 12 is really the sweet spot, I think. It's like, I'm going to bed. No, you're not. You have things to write down and I get out of bed. Or I'm like, I'm not even going to go to bed because I know something is coming. Yeah.
I ask that question because so many people say that like 3 a.m. is the poet's hour.
Wow. That would wreck me if I did at 3 a.m. I can't do super late night. Like 1 is probably my limit. Maybe 2, but like any time after that, and I think I might turn into a zombie. So yeah.
It's one of those stereotypes, right? That like the 3, 4 o'clock. Now here's what I will say.
That's funny.
I do believe there is actually a magic hour between around between like 3 and like 5. I actually do think there's a magic hour for all kinds of.
Totally.
All kinds.
Totally. Oh, yeah.
You know, I know even in Kundalini yoga, they want you to get up before the sunrise, all those different things. But when I first got the hint that I wanted to first start trying to write a memoir of my husband's journey of 1 year, I awoke at 4:30 a.m.
Wow.
And it didn't come out until, and then I kept waking up at 4:30.
Wow.
And I couldn't go back to bed, so I would just go and write. And I got the words out, and then I could go back to bed. Right? Like you said,
so
I'm not.
Now I can rest.
Exactly. I'm not going to go to bed
because
I got to write.
Yeah.
That's what I would
so
do.
Real.
I kept waking up at 4:30 almost on the dot. And I would just be like, well, okay, I got to go to my computer. And then I would go back to bed for what I later learned in the book Wintering is referred to as the second sleep.
Wow.
It's a thing. It's a practice. It's in the book Wintering by Catherine Mays. I think that's her name. Just came out.
Okay.
Wonderful book about wintering, like our inner winter. And she talks about the second sleep and that this is a practice people used to do when they would wake up. And then go, they would maybe, she said, they would have deep conversations. They would pray. They would make love. They would do something artistic. And then they'd go back to bed. And I thought, gee.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that beautiful? Who knew it was a real thing? There you go.
Yeah, I love that.
There's a term for
second
it.
Sleep.
Yes.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yes, exactly. It's a great book, everyone. I'll put it in the show notes, Wintering, because it's fantastic. And look up that term. Look that up.
Yeah, I will.
I wish I had the page like right in front of me. I would read it to you because she describes it beautifully. Okay. Speaking of stereotypes around poets. Do you think that there is a stereotype that is out there about poets that you think is true, at least for you?
I mean, I guess the emotional aspects, like we kind of have to be, you know, otherwise it's fake and nobody wants to read that, you know? So I think that, I mean, that's been a huge part of like, I know I'm very in tune with my emotions. I'm very into getting other people in tune with their emotions. So I think just being emotionally driven beings, not an emotional, right? Because I think there's such a negative connotation with that, but just emotionally driven being, I am that. And that also tends to be poets as well, I think, for the most part.
Agreed. Name an artist or a song that you always come back to.
While I'm writing, anything Sleeping at Last, for the most part, is a huge, I mean, I've listened to him for years and years and years. And so that will forever be my go-to of like my creative trigger musician or song person.
Sleeping at Last. What is a book that changed your life or your perspective in a massive way?
Untamed by Glennon Doyle. Yeah, that's all. I'm not even going to say anything about it. Just go get it if you haven't read it. It is unlocking and untaming just so much of what we've known or haven't known. And there's just so much freedom in it that I didn't know I was allowed to accept.
Cheetah.
Yeah. So good. So good.
Yep. All the cheetahs. Yes. I love how she writes. She's just like so to the point.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's great. I mean, I think everyone who listens to this podcast has probably read Untamed.
Totally. Totally. Perfect. Good.
Most likely.
You're all on the right track then. That's, yeah, because it is a good one.
That's the target audience. Yeah, right there. Mm-hmm. Okay. And let's see here. Last one. What's one poetic theme that you think you will always write about?
Ocean. Anything dealing with the ocean. Mm-hmm. Whether that be the physical sense of it or using it as a metaphor to connect back to soul. Something in that regard. But I think I will always talk about, if not the ocean itself, bodies of water. Those are like one of my biggest spaces for seeing, being, and existing. And so I think I'll always come back to that.
Beautiful. Okay, so to wind down this wonderful hour conversation here, two things. First is I'd like to have you tell everyone where we can find you and connect with you, all the things, all the beautiful offerings that you share. And then I think to take us home and just drive off into the sunset of this podcast, then we can close with a favorite piece of yours that you can read, and we'll literally just take it right out with that. Does that sound good?
Perfect.
Okay, so where can we find you?
You can find me all things Ariel Astoria. That's ARIELLEESTORIA. You can find me on a SoundCloud if you're underground like that. Twitter and Spotify and iTunes, like we've mentioned, as well as my website, which you can find all of my books as well. And Instagram. That's my home space. It's kind of where I live and breathe. So you can also find me there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All right, let's take a final poetic pause with Ariel Astoria, the one and only. I'm going to go ahead and take this in, sit up nice and tall. Go ahead and take a breath in. Maybe shrug your shoulders and just exhale.
This is for the dreamers who skip rocks on clouds even when people keep telling them to come down. Yes, this. It's for the hopeless romantics, who are more than open wounds or open books. They are pop-up shops of love, leaving letters in glass bottles and kissing them to shore. Yes, this is for the wild ones, too haunted by rejection to admit that they are wild. You are stampedes of freedom that everyone else is afraid of. You are proof that this world is not in need of any more normal. Yes, this is for the girls searching for beauty in cracked mirrors. There is no wholeness there for the women who are hushed. Do not let them silence the novel streaming from your tongue. Do not let them cage the lioness in your gut. Yes, this is for the women who get told that they are more chaos than human, more storm than functioning. It is okay to choose yourself sometimes. It does not mean that you are selfish. Yes, this is for the lonely. I know the way it hurts when the stars kiss this side of Earth, but please, darling, get up from your floor. There is no life for you there. Yes, this is for the wallflowers. Baby, it's time to peel your back up off that wall and dance. Do not be afraid of the way that your feet will take you somewhere new. Somewhere new is not always terrifying. Sometimes it is necessary. Yes, this as for the boys who get told to man up, you are man enough. For the men searching for the little boy still living inside of them, you will not find him on the bottom of your briefcase. It is okay to go play in the sand sometimes. Yes, this is for the women who are not yet in awe of the way that their being carries life. You are wonder and warrior. For the fathers who are not known as half dad and half marathon runner, you held baby in the palm of your hand. You are the definition of stay. Yes, this is for the teachers who are wondering why their heartbeat for change lessened with their paychecks. I heard a poet say once that sometimes they will hand you work boots in exchange for your dreams. You tell them instead, stop giving directions to places you've never been. Teach those kids that there's power in the ink of their pens. Yes, this is for the tutus and the Superman capes that we've buried. For the words though you've not yet let bloom, for the people who are only a smile away from being family, for the people who have not heard our dimple when we tell them, I love you, and this is for time. The way it ebbs and flows around us, daring us to blink, slipping through our fingers like sand. This is for the way the wave always comes back and the storm always comes, but this one This right here, this is for you. Your letter on a glass bottle on your shore, open it. I hope you read in big, bold letters, you are enough. Yes, this one, this is for you, and you are more than enough.
Thank you so much, Ariel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for doing the work. Thank you for taking care of yourself. Here's to your poetic healing. And be sure to check in next week for my conversation with poetess Sasha Nudell and her book, A Mouth Full of Lust, where we talk sensuality, sexuality, and motherhood. You can hear more of my poetry and mine and Brad's story on Instagram at Alyssa Cousins, AlyssaKuzins. And please share, rate, and review this podcast should your heart feel called.